Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that place off.
What's up? What's up, Bertie? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And it's time for the one, the only, Angie Setzer, I guess. Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice president of grains. It says, what's up, Angie?
Oh, not too much. I think every day anyone that works with me is thankful that there's only one and only one of me. So yeah, just, living the dream out here in northern Iowa. Watching guys get started planting, trying to anyway. Seems like every time we turn around, we get a rainstorm and they're sad again. But, as my grandpa always said, you never wish away rain, even if it's May. So hopefully it will work its way out in the long run here.
Yeah, but you and I have talked about this many times. I mean, today's planting is not like it was, even 10 years ago. I mean, they can plant. I mean, in your opinion, when is the latest they can plant and still have a good crop?
I would say by the end of May. I mean, honestly, you've got varieties now that are shorter day varieties that you can. It used to be that, if you were much below 100 day, which is the length of time it takes for something to be mature, basically, they'll say days. So 100 day, 120 day, whatever, 110 day, whatever it may be. And it used to be you'd get much below 100, 110 day corn, whatever the variety is on it. It just wouldn't yield, like people thought it should or something of that nature. But now you're getting down to where you can have 90 day varieties, 3 months, and they're mature that puts you to the end of August. The biggest thing that guys worry about when it comes to planting time, more than anything really, is trying to get pollinated ahead of that, usually July, August heat that you see, last half July, first part of August. So that's why, the old adage, knee high by the 4th of July anymore, it's shoulder high by the 4th of July. And that's why. So you're not pollinating during, it always seems you get a pretty strong heat wave there the last half of July into the first half of August. So that's what they want to try to avoid. But if you get reasonable conditions that you plant into and the seed basically germinates almost once you put it in the soil because the soil temperatures are warm and they have enough moisture and stuff like that, it completely outweighs anything else. So that was part of what you saw last year is the stuff that was planted the last half of May out here in northern Iowa did as good or better than the stuff that was planted earlier simply because it was put into better ground conditions.
Right, because there's no risk.
You had stuff that was planted in the last half of April last year here that didn't emerge. It basically emerged at the same time as stuff that was planted the day after Mother's Day. So it's just one of those deals where everyone gets a little panicked. I saw someone mention today they're from the northern Corn Belt, and they're like, "Oh, we're just getting started a month late." And I'm like, "You would have corn planted in April 7th and." In Minnesota, I don't think so. And so it's almost one of those things where, and I don't know if I've mentioned it here before or not, but it's almost like we corn planting and Christmas decorations in stores in the fall are the same thing. It gets earlier every year.
No, I mean, I think that, let me ask you this question. Do you ever foresee, like, let's say right now they're trying to get the stuff in as soon as they can, as soon as the weather breaks, they're trying to get in. But, of course, if that happens, sometimes you have some bad weather after that, and it actually kills what you already did. Do you foresee ever them pushing back with the technology and because of what we can do today? Do you see the actual planting season being pushed back at all a little bit because there is no need to try to get in so fast? I mean, one of the reasons we used to try to get in so fast is because it took so long to get it in, right? I mean, so
yeah.
Do you see that changing at all? Do you see, like, the target planting date ever being let's say the target would be, I want to start May 5th. I mean, I'm not just using that for an example. You ever see something like that happening?
Yeah. Oh, and you're already seeing it. There's folks out there. It's different mindsets depending on who you're working with. But You know, I have two different types of customers, you know, and everyone knows who each one is. That's the funniest part is, you know, I have one customer that he always is first or second out, and you know he is. No one ever gets too worked up when they see them out working ground because they anticipate that they'll be, you know, a week or two ahead of everyone else. I have other customers that are exactly of that mindset. You know, maybe they're a little bit older fashioned. Maybe they're a little bit older in general of the older generation or whatnot, but they're raising another generation with the same tools or same mindset. And they don't start until Mother's Day. It doesn't matter what the weather is like. They just don't start until Mother's Day, you know, simply because they started early once in their career and got frosted off or something like that. And I think studies are starting to indicate, you know, there was a push there for a while that said that the earlier you planted, the better the yield. But now folks are realizing that it's not so much what you're planting into or when you're planting. It's what the forecast looks like, you know, after planting and stuff like that. So I think you'll see. You know, there's some folks that are testing. You know, hey, we'll put it in March. There's a lot of soybean planting, projects being done that they're planting in the end of March just to see what'll happen. Maybe it's 10, 15, 20 acres, stuff like that. And then they're planting in late May just to see. And so I think as time progresses, you're going to see different groups of people, you know, pick up different things that fit better for their farming operation and it'll change. You know, not to mention the fact the size of equipment nowadays. I mean, it's not unheard of to have guys that own, you know, multiple 24, 36, or 48 row planters to where it takes them 5 days to plant, you know, a couple thousand acres, you know, maybe not even 5 days. And I can tell you last night, like I said, out here in northern Iowa, guys have been waiting for the conditions to break. They finally have. I mean, we were ready to plant last Monday, Tuesday. The field conditions were good to where they could get back out into them and start doing some field work. Then we got an inch and a half of rain. It's dry again. You know, by yesterday it was dry again and guys were ready to roll and getting going. And I know last night, you know, let the dogs out before bed sort of deal, 9:30, 10 o'clock. And you could look around and count the tractors that were working in the fields, you know, around the area. And that's not something that you had even, you know, 10 years ago. The lights and the ability to plant in the dark and stuff like that is different too. So, like I said, I mean, it's we have the ability to really get the crop in.
Listen, it's funny. I was driving. My daughter graduated from Iowa State on Sunday, and I was driving back. Yeah. So I drove through Ohio, Indiana, Illinois in the dark, and I can't tell you how many tractors I saw out there with lights on, you know, planting last night. So, again, yeah. I'm sorry?
It was unheard of, you know, 10 years ago. Your LED systems, your auto steer system, you know, your precision planting technology and stuff like that, you know, it didn't used to be that you would want to do something as important as planting in the dark just simply because you were leaving too much open for guesswork and now you're not doing that. Now you don't see it. Guys there's folks out there that are working, you know, 20 hours a day trying to get the crop in the ground. So it's definitely something that has changed the market setup. And so that was what was funny to me is, you know, it 2 weeks ago you had, we're never going to get planted. And now the very same people are, you know, we're going to grow, we're going to gain a bunch of acres, you know. And so that's always, it's so funny to me how quickly people can change their minds. I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You never want to marry a mindset by any means, but you know, there's some people that change their market outlook like they change underwear, and that part's amazing too.
Well, at least they're keeping it clean. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, this is the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And of course, we want to remind you to download the Bubba Show every single day at libertytalk.fm so that we can continue to amuse you with people like Angie on the show and who give you the straight facts. And of course, don't forget about our high school investing program. We're trying to continue to educate our youth, and we are doing that. And now we are looking for some help from you at Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaTrading. If you'd like to help us out, please feel free to. We want to continue to help our youth learn more about finances and how to take care of things. So check that out. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be back with Angie after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, obviously we've seen a dramatic move in crude oil, and you and I have talked about the diesel fuel and things that they're doing. Is it becoming an issue for farmers and producers now, the cost of fuel? Is that starting to cut into them pretty deeply, or are we still okay based on what's going on?
For the most part, we're still okay based on what's going on. I mean, I'm not saying that in the sense that no one's kind of noticing the pinch, but it hasn't gotten bad enough yet to where I've had anyone mention it to me as a reason behind, you know, all my cost of production is going up because diesel is going up or something of that nature. And that's the one nice thing. I mean, most of the farmers that I work with are perhaps large enough to where they had they have an on-farm tank or something of that nature, and so it's helpful to them. They haven't had to refill it just yet. So, you know, give it another couple weeks when they have to, and it may be a different story. So it is an issue, though. It will continue to be an issue because of energy prices and things of that nature, and the way they tie into so many factors in life. So it is something. It just may not be something that guys are necessarily noticing just yet, at least enough to where they're saying it to me. You know, they may be noticing it, but you know, the common problem that we're still seeing is what you and I have talked about 1,000 times before, which is just, you know, healthcare costs and other costs. I think diesel is kind of one of those things that it's assumed it's going to cause a pinch here or there every now and again, but everything else is you know, it adds in, and it's definitely not what you want to see. I mean, you'd rather for sure see you know, reduced inputs across the board, but no one has been too upset about it, at least at this point.
Well, no, I mean, I guess my question is why don't farmers, or maybe some do, but farmers, producers, why don't they hedge oil when it's inexpensive and hedge against future? I mean, you know, it's kind of like the airlines. I mean, you know, the airlines forever would never hedge, and they would go bankrupt every few years, right? Because it was always fuel costs that kill them. Obviously, airplanes use a little bit more fuel than farmers do, but at the end of the day, why wouldn't they just say, okay, so if fuel's at if oil at $50 a barrel is my where I make my most amount of money, then why don't I go hedge there? So if fuel goes down, then obviously I can just let my hedge go away, and I can still make more money. Whereas if it gets crazy, and we have, you know, issues in the Middle East, and we've got issues with OPEC, and we've got issues here, then I know that my fuel cost is, so it's not, that's not going to have an effect on my bottom line. Why don't they do that?
Yeah, they can, and they do. I mean, a lot of them actually will just buy the physical, so they allow their supplier to do the hedging for them. You know, where they'll say, okay, I refill my tank once a month, or I refill my tank once every 3 months, or something of that nature. And so they'll go out, and if the price drops low enough, which I have had some folks do, we've done it as a company before, where we just book the physical. So you talk to your supplier, and they say, okay, this is what it is here. This is what it is spread out, you know, through the next 6 months, or spread out through the next year. And you can go ahead and book however many gallons you want to, you know, yada, 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 as long as you have enough volume. And so a lot of them will go out and actually book the physical when the price is good for them. And there are some that I think would hedge it. But farmers, you know, always tend to get a little nervous on that side, where if they're actually doing the hedging, you know, it's like, well, it could go lower, and then I'm going to have to margin it, or, you know, if it goes up, then it's a winner. But, you know, they might pocket money before they need it and stuff like that. So it's just, but you'll see farmers that will hedge it. It's just not as common as guys that'll go out and actually just purchase or buy the physical.
Yeah, but if you buy the physical, then you got to store it, and then you got other things. Whereas you could just say, I mean, you could simply just buy a call if you wanted, right? I mean, there's a lot of ways. Yeah. You don't have to put yourself in a margin position. You could just, you know, there's 1,000 different ways to hedge your input as well as your output costs. And so why, you know, why don't we just, you know, do that instead of taking the physical? I mean, physical costs money to store. And the other thing is if you pay, let's say you pay $50, okay, and it goes to 30, yeah, you're stuck with what you paid for at 50, where if you hedge it using options or futures, then if it goes to 30, you can abandon your option position and just to take the small loss, but yet you're making a fortune back on the cost. I mean, that's what I'd like to know. What do you think?
Yeah, No, I agree with you completely. It's just kind of a shifting the mindset. That's been our hardest adjustment when it comes down to it. You know, that you've got the progressive guys out there that do that. They have no problem with either owning on the board outright or just doing the option side of things to cover it. But then you have others that they do nothing, and they're just wide open to the portion of whatever happens with the price moves. And then, you know, others have just been so comfortable with holding the physical position, you know, and that's with physical for them, you know, they're going to use it anyway. So they figure that, you know, I go through X amount of diesel in a certain amount of time, so I'm going to go ahead and buy this amount. And yeah, if it goes lower, then that really stinks. You know, that's no fun for them whatsoever. And they know it, and they're used to it. I mean, it's been one of those things that they've paid attention to, and it just depends. I mean, the for a farmer, I think they pay more attention even. I mean, diesel is very, very important. Like, I don't want to sound like it's not, but the farmer tends to pay a lot more attention even to natural gas and propane, because it comes down, natural gas is tied to fertilizer, and then propane for drying in the fall. They'll pay more attention to that and spend more time trying to figure out how to trade it better than they will diesel. And why, I don't know. Don't, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's just been an ingrained way of doing things in the business, and that's how they've done it for X amount of time, and that's how they'll continue to do it. So it seems in the industry, more of the hedging, the big time hedging, will come into play, you know, with the local suppliers, your co-ops, or someone of that nature that's actually delivering the fuel to the farmer.
No, I understand all that. But again, this is just, you know, every dollar we give away is a dollar we could actually just save and keep it in our pocket versus giving it to somebody else because we don't want to do it the right way. And the right way would be to hedge natural gas, would be hedge fuel, and not to have to deal with all these issues. And then it doesn't become a problem later. It shouldn't be, oh, well, it's going down, but I already paid for it. It should be, hey, I've got the best price, so I can make more profit for myself, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it definitely should be. And that's the direction that I think you're seeing people head in a lot of ways. You know, like I said, the more progressive farmers are willing to hedge and do all of the steps that need to be taken to profit in every possible scenario. You know, but it's not something that you would say is exceptionally common out there for, you know, from an overall standpoint. And honestly, I can't necessarily speak for it directly, simply because it may not be something that we talk a lot about from a marketing standpoint. A lot of times, if a farmer does do something like that, he's working with a secondary broker of some sort, but that's not me. And so, you know, if he asks me about crude or what I'm seeing in that, I can give an idea or a 10,000 foot view of what's going on. But if he's going to be investing or trading, when it comes to that type of market structure, a lot of times they'll work with someone else on that.
Yeah, but I mean, you should be the main, because you are the person who is involved in the biggest adventures that they have. And I think that it's not that you have to trade it for them, but it certainly should be something that should be considered. Because at the end of the day, we have to make sure that, you know, in life, it's not about all the money you make. It's about all the money you save by things that it costs that you incur that you don't have to incur. And I think that's one of the things that I look at from my standpoint is, you know, I watch too many people give away too much because they're not worried about those costs. But I think they should be. And I think that's one of the issues that we see in business in general. It doesn't matter whether it's farming or whether it's manufacturing, but why give away anything if you don't have to? That's the way I look at it, and I'm sure you possibly agree, but you can comment when we get back from the break. This is Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And of course, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We want to remind you to download the show each and every day at libertytalk.fm, and don't forget to get Bubba's Daily Update, which is available to you for free. No credit card required, nothing required. Go to bubbatrading.com and just fill out the little box when it comes in. And every day after the market close, I'll send you a video, 3 to 5 minutes, telling you what I saw, what I expect to see. It's like getting tomorrow's newspaper today. This is The Bubba Show. We'll be right back with more from Angie after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, coming right back to you. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. Okay, my dear, so we've seen, which I predicted, I think you agreed with me, I don't remember, it doesn't matter. You didn't disagree for sure, but you might have agreed. I said the dollar is going to go bananas to the upside, and it is. It's going bananas to the upside. Yet, until Monday, the grain prices were going a lot higher as well, and they're getting a little bit of pressure, but I don't blame that on the dollar. I blame that on just, you know, at some point, some guys want to take some profits. I mean, you know, you just can't expect markets to go up forever, and I think you're seeing some profit taking versus a dollar effect. Because if you look at the other commodities, you look at gold is going up all of a sudden. You look at the gold, oil is going up. So grains are going down, but the dollar is still spiking. I say it means nothing at this point. It's really of no value right now, and it should not affect somebody's opinion of what's going on in the markets. What say you?
I agree completely. I mean, Monday's move, it had more to do with questions over the South American weather forecast and the wheat market falling off and all of the other junk that's going on in the market, more so than the dollar by any means. And anyone that tries to connect them is just grasping at straws. You know, when it comes down to it, overall global supplies and demand, you know, will have more to do with values and price moves than anything. So the dollar is really not going to mean a whole lot if our buyers need to buy and they don't have access to another form of supply, you know. And so everyone, like I said, they can try to tie it together. And I've got a friend in the industry that always kind of cracks me up a little bit. And part of it is sarcasm more so than anything else. But he'll say, you know, oh, the dollar on, you know, the dollar matters, which is on today, or the dollar matters, which is off. And you know, if you pay attention to what the dollar is doing versus what the market's doing, you know, you might find a day or two where there's a correlation, but it's definitely not causation in that sense. So to me, the dollar, if we had plentiful global supplies everywhere, you know, which we had seen at the start of a year ago when the dollar was high, then yeah, there is an issue or that could come into play, you know, when it comes to buying interest and things like that. But when it comes down to it, you know, overall, as we move forward, there may be some more available supply when it comes to soybeans or something like that from a global standpoint. But the story that's developing in corn is an interesting one, and the dollar's not going to mean a whole lot, you know, overall, I think, when it comes down to it, when you're looking at what we could see happen if we do see a continuation of a tiny, you know, or smaller bean crop coming out of, or corn crop coming out of Brazil, second crop corn.
No, I mean, the dollar never means anything. I guess eventually they will all correlate together at some point. But in any given day, you know, maybe we've already, this is what I believe anyways, but maybe the grains have already priced in a higher dollar, which I've said many times on RFD TV, is that the dollar has already been accounted for because it's truly not a true free trade. It's not a supply and demand issue. It's really more of a manipulated trade. And I think that the grain producers and the buyers have realized that the dollar is really immaterial at this point, because of what they do. And again, eventually, yes, everything will correlate that's supposed to correlate. But I always laugh when you hear the, you know, we talk about oil for a minute. You hear about the oil and you go, well, oil's going to the moon. And, you know, it's great for the economy. And then oil's going to the moon. No, it's not great for the economy. And with the correlation between the oil and the stock market, that's not a true correlation because they are really not correlated asset classes. One has nothing to do with the other. The stock market and oil have nothing to do in the big scheme of life together. In fact, oil prices get too high, that should have an adverse effect on the stock market because people are paying more money for goods and services, which leaves less money for investing. What do you say?
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I mean, it's definitely something that you want to pay attention to. And we have this conversation all the time. The Fed's talking about the lack of inflationary pressure, right? I mean, that's been the lack of visible inflation or whatnot. I don't know about you, but I've noticed the cost of my living sure as hell gone up. You know what I mean? And maybe it's not necessarily seen in the prices at the grocery store or something of that nature because we've been able to keep in commodities somewhat artificially depressed due to the increase in global supply availability and things like that. But I think from an overall standpoint, you are going to see less available supply of money flowing into the outside markets and things like that. And people are going to want to be holding a lot tighter to things. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how things progress. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's well above my pay grade when it comes to assessing what's going on from an economic standpoint. But there was an interesting discussion that I saw last week after the employment numbers, which as a whole looks pretty good, right? I mean, that looks great, but you're not seeing your hourly...
The jobs numbers sucked. Wait a second. I got to stop. The jobs numbers sucked. It still sucks. Nothing has changed. Look, yeah, it's great. I just got another 4 cents an hour increase in my pay. So in the last two jobs numbers, I've gotten a total of 12 cents, which I couldn't even take my family to a baseball game with the amount of money that I'm making a year. I couldn't take them to one baseball game. I'm lucky if I can buy a hot dog with the increase and the number of jobs. And of course, it's the quality of jobs. The jobs that we're creating are not good. We're creating many more service jobs. And yes, there's some great jobs available. Unfortunately, Angie Setzer, you want to get a new job, but you got to become a programmer. Are you a computer programmer?
Yeah. No, I don't even know how to use Excel properly.
Well, that's my point. So, yes, we're in the middle of an industrial, well, now it would be a technical revolution, and, you know, things have to change over. Unfortunately, it's not as easy as it was when we went into the industrial revolution because teaching those things were much easier than teaching code and the other stuff that we have to learn how to do. In the meantime, we have an economy that inflation is running rampant as far as I'm concerned. The only good break I got is that I'm now just finished with my second kid, you know, 5 years in a row. I was paying two tuitions. Now I'm not paying any. So I get a raise there, but I paid to fill up my tank of gas and it was $61 instead of $30. Yeah. So to me, that's a bigger problem and that's going to create more of an issue for everybody going down the road. What say you?
I agree completely. And that's what we were talking about, you know, before with the cost of diesel and things like that on farmers is it's a huge factor. It's going to continue to be a huge factor. I mean, a lot of times guys can take their lump for a month or so, you know, and there's been a lot of conversation about it where it's like, are we watching what crude's doing here? You know, what is that going to mean for the average American person? And I'm not too far separated from, you know, I had to commute 35 miles, which isn't a lot compared to the average, you know, American. But my first job out of college, I didn't make a heck of a lot of money at all. I mean, there were some weeks where my husband and I had to try to figure out how to make, you know, $35 work for groceries. And I never want to find out what's in those frozen tubes of hamburger, honest to God, because we lived on those. They're 99 cents a pound at the time. But, you know, I'm not too far removed from a gallon of gas when it hit almost $5 around Memorial Day weekend here, you know, what, 10 years ago or so, and actually crying when I filled up my tank because it was pinching us to the point of no return. And you know, I'm very fortunate to be where we are now to where it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, it might make you think twice about taking a long trip, but it's not something that's impacting our everyday life just yet. But we're in a different scenario than a lot of Americans out there who are in these service positions. And that's, we were just talking about that, Carl and I, my husband, yesterday, that there was a gal, we went to Dairy Queen and picked up a blizzard, you know, to celebrate the summer weather. And the gal that was working there, he said she works full-time there and full-time at the grocery store and still has to live with her parents because the cost of living is that ridiculous. You know, the rent in our area is exceptionally high because those who can't get a mortgage, of course, have to live somewhere. And so the rental properties are dwindling around here, and rent has creeped up to where an average household. You know, if you don't have children, you're not going to get rental assistance by any means, and that she's a single woman in her early 30s or whatever. And you know, rent is $950 to $1,000. We're in northern Iowa. I mean, I could see something like that in other places, but we're in the middle of nowhere. And rent has creeped up. To fill up your tanks, creeped up. Health care is expensive, you know, and you can sure bet that she's, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm assuming here, but savings and investing is probably the last thing that's on her mind at this point. And I think you'll find that the majority of Americans, you know, unfortunately, our middle class are living in that same boat where they're just trying to make sure that they can pay off, you know, pay the minimum on their credit card every month so they can continue to try to live that lifestyle that Facebook tells them they should be living.
No, listen, that's 100% correct. And again, I say this, that, you know, that same apartment in Chicago would be, let's say, 1900, not 900, 1900. Yeah. But the back to the gas. So you take a person, a guy or gal who's got a job that maybe they, let's say they make $40,000 a year. Okay. And they have to drive a lot and they don't get their gas reimbursed. So all of a sudden they're just cutting into their paycheck. And that is the problem that I see. And that's why I think the economy has a lot more troubles than anybody cares to admit to it. And that's why I believe that the Federal Reserve is idiotic, because they will not make it where everybody else can create these jobs. And you've got a lot of jobs, and we've got a 3.9% unemployment, except the problem is that the bigger majority of people are making minimum wage. So how far can you go on minimum wage? And if you're an apartment that is $900 a month in Iowa and you're making minimum wage, or you're making $400 a week, well, there's 50% of your money just to the rent. Now, how are you going to eat and take care of your kids if you get kids? So again, that's the big issue that I see, and those are the problems that I recognize, and that's where I think we've got it wrong, and we continue to rely on things like the Fed to make these decisions, because they've never made the decision right ever. Why would I expect it today? This is Angie Setzer. This is The Bubba Show. She is the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And of course, don't forget to download The Bubba Show each and every day at libertytalk.fm. And of course, speaking of money, we need money for our high school investing program. If you want to help us out, go to Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaTrading, so we can continue to educate the youth of America, because we give the program to the schools for free. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with more after the break with Angie. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I settle on down. Welcome back to The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, with the goddess of grains herself, Angie Setzer, goddess of grains on Twitter, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. Okay, my dear, so obviously, soybeans have been, you and I both were very concerned about soybeans, and they're under a little pressure the last couple of days. Really still stuck in a consolidation range, maybe towards the bottom end, and maybe we'll get a little pop here. But you and I were both concerned, but we both loved corn and wheat, and of course, they both had pretty good moves. And yeah, they're under a little bit of pressure. But I mean, you're still looking at July corn over $4. You're still looking at, July wheat, you know, over $5.10. I mean, certainly a lot higher than they were months ago, and now we're starting to see. And I, to me, this is just another buying opportunity. I think that we're going significantly higher even from here. What say you?
I agree. Yeah, I definitely agree in corn. I'm watching what's going on in Brazil, especially. Their second crop corn is extremely important. I mean, it's the bulk of their production. You know, you're talking 60 million metric tons, or 2.4, you know, billion bushel, basically, of production comes out of their second crop corn. And that's huge. It's a huge, huge number. And I'm going to have to double check my math now that I've said it. I hate converting stuff on the fly. But anyway, you know, you're looking at a large, large portion of their production there. And the issue is arising at this point in time that there's portions of that area that are growing that second crop corn that haven't seen rain in 40 days, not a drop. So, you know, typically their dry season doesn't start until the first part of June, which allows them to make a pretty exceptional second crop of corn. You know, last year it was a record large amount of production, and really cut into the potential for U.S. exports. You know, you saw the USDA cut back on expected corn exports at the start of the year, and everyone kind of agreed that would be an issue, and you know, all of these things. I mean, and now suddenly you saw a reduction in their first crop of corn, because everyone was intending on you know, basically producing that corn in the second crop portion of the year, and they wanted to produce soybeans the first go around, and they did. They had a hellacious soybean crop. Estimates continue to creep up on what Brazil produced when it came to soybeans this past year. But now suddenly you're starting to see this corn crop size reduced and continuing to be reduced. We saw another estimate come out today, cutting nearly 100 million bushel off from the latest estimate. And that's just the start. There is some talk, and that's part of the reason you're seeing the market back off a little bit, is that the rain chances could start to creep back into portions of the southeastern production area. The weather group that I follow says that that's not going to happen. At the earliest rainfall might happen the later half of next week, not the last half of this week. And it's definitely not going to be a drought-busting rain. And the majority of that crop's starting to go through pollination, the important type of production. So you may wonder, why is she going on about this? Well, that's huge. I mean, if you see a significant reduction in Brazil's production outlook, which the USDA has been really slow, which, of course, you and I have had our conversations about the USDA in the past, but the USDA has been really slow to reduce their expectations on that crop. I think last month they lowered it a half a million metric ton or something, just a tiny amount versus where everyone else has been. I mean, they're already off by 300 million bushel plus of where the folks in Brazil are. So you take a half a billion bushel of production out, and we haven't even really pinned down what's happened with Argentina's corn crop yet either, but we're looking to remove a significant amount of corn from the global supply outlook based on what's happening in Brazil, what happened in Argentina. China, of course, creating the tariffs on sorghum has basically made their domestic corn demand skyrocket. So that's also huge. And so there's a lot of things that are happening in corn right now. My customers are sitting, around 30% or so sold between 390 and 420. And we have the expectation of capturing another chunk of sales, another 10% of production around 435. Into that port, another one chunk at that 435 level-ish. I say hard numbers, but they all depend on what the farmer wants to look at. And then another set of orders in 445 to 450, that'll get us up to about 50%, and then we'll see what the summer months bring. And that gives us a chance to have a solid foundation and build from there. So we're definitely sitting prepared. I'm always careful because my job is to manage risk. So you can always own calls, instead of being naked outright on price and open to the downward moves that could develop in the market. But, I'm always hesitant to not have something locked in when the market moves higher, but I'm definitely expecting another leg to this corn market move. And wheat, I think wheat wheat, of course, has surpassed all kinds of thoughts that traders had going into this thing with September wheat blowing above 550 here last week on the Chicago market. I think it finds support around $5 and probably continues to trade in that $5-$5.50 range on wheat for a while yet. And corn, I think, will be the one that ends up being the leader here over the next couple months, once we get a feel for what we're looking at production-wise.
I think they go a lot higher, and I think there's an outside chance that we have a big market this year. Any thought to that?
A big market this year?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have people that I never want to be one of those people. I always get so angry with the folks that to feed into this farmer, because it's difficult. Farmers are already optimists. You couldn't be a farmer and not be an optimist in the sense that you always anticipate price to go up significantly from where it's at. And sometimes that stops people from selling and managing risk properly, which is so it's always a fine line of this is what I anticipate, but this is what you should do. But I would not be the least bit surprised to see the market put on, and I don't even want to say it out loud, but multi-year highs that we may not have seen since 13 or 14 in market structure, just definitely ahead of the June 30th report. If this Brazilian issue continues on, if we see to where we can kiss and make up with China, which it does look like we're heading in that direction, at least as of last week, some of that communication's looking pretty good. So if we can show that we want to sell some corn into China, if Europe steps up, there's been conversation there that we'll make European nations exempt of the steel and aluminum tariffs if they allow access to for our corn market. You know, we've heard some of that going on. If NAFTA is solved and we come out with a solid solution there, and we build this idea that we only have 88 million acres of corn, and I might even start to talk production. You know what I mean? Because the yield estimates, I think, are stupid, especially this early in the game. But there are so many things going on in the corn market that I think you could just catch people completely off guard and like I said, trade up to multi-year highs in a surprising fashion without even realizing it's happening. You know, but like I said, it's always a struggle of managing risk and being bullish in the sense that that's never a guarantee, but I do think it's something that could definitely happen.
Well, but managing risk is one thing, and you should always manage it. Look, at there's two quotes or two things you should remember. It's always better to wish you were not in a trade or you were in a trade than you weren't, number one. And number two, you should be pissed off that you made less money because the markets kept going up, but at least you protected yourself in case they didn't keep going up. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And my push is always scale selling. So, you know, like what I'm talking about here with these guys is if they're half sold between here and 450. So, you know, you've sold 50% of your expected production, which is using your insurance yields, you know, the yields that you're insured at. So, if you're half sold, that means that you have half of your crop left to sell at higher values. And depending on when it happens, you know, if you end up half sold in May, you know, you have more time to be a bit, and I hate to use the term greedier, but you can wait longer for your next chunk of sales. If you have nothing sold and the market collapses, you know, it's the same thing as my customers having half of their beans sold between 10 and
50. All right, Angie, thanks so much. We're out of time, baby. Have a great day. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I always love it.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horowitz. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day. See you on Wednesday. Good day, everybody.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.